Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Australia's bishops head to Rome for their ad limina visits. I'll be talking to the president of their conference, Archbishop Philip Wilson, about the strengths and weaknesses of the church in Australia today. And an unlikely partnership. Find out why a couple of London's metropolitan police officers were over in the Vatican this week to talk about human trafficking. Australia's Catholic bishops are headed to Rome this weekend for the start of their ad limina visits, the five-yearly visit that all bishops worldwide are required to make to discuss the challenges specific to the churches in their individual countries. Australia has 33 dioceses, representing around 5 million Catholics, or 25% of the population, making it the largest Christian denomination in the country. President of the Bishops' Conference is Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide. Just before he left home, I spoke to him by phone to find out more about the issues and concerns he and the other church leaders will be bringing here to the Vatican.
The Australian Catholic bishops are coming to Rome for the ad limina visit with a really deeply spiritual sense of pilgrimage. We're coming to meet with the Holy Father, not just in the sense of coming to do business, but to meet with the Holy Father and to do what's the necessary elements of an ad limina visit in order to be renewed in faith ourselves and to be renewed in our ability to be able to lead local churches in union with the See of Peter. So this is a very important moment of us for prayer and conversion. It's not just about coming for a convention. We're coming in order together to have an experience of prayer and faith, and to have a very real, deep experience of our communion with the Holy Father that's so important to all of us as bishops in the Catholic Church.
Can you give us something of a snapshot of the Catholic community in Australia today, its strengths and perhaps its weaknesses too?
One of the great strengths of the Catholic community in Australia is that it's made up of people who've come from many different nations. So that the Catholic Church in Australia now has strong components in it of people who've migrated from Europe and Asia over the last 50 years and have taken their rightful place in the life of our church here. And they've contributed a lot by bringing the experience of their history and the experience of their faith into our midst. So there's a great strength in that. There's a great strength in the fact that among the Catholic people in Australia, there's really strong commitment among a majority of our people to our Catholic faith and wanting to live out our Catholic faith in the best way that they can.
What would you say then are perhaps the weaknesses, the greatest challenges that you as church leaders face in your work there?
Look, the greatest challenges we face are exactly those to be found in other parts of the world because of the really strong power of sectarian views of life, you know, where people believe that it's possible to live a fulfilled life without belief in God. And the people then think that the faith and the experiences of living in the church are irrelevant to them in their lives. And so our big responsibility as the bishops and leaders of the church is to really return over and over again to the freshness of the power of the gospel and the freshness of the relationship with Jesus that should be at the centre of our lives.
You mentioned this great melting pot of people from so many different countries and cultures, but you also have a significant ministry, don't you, to the original inhabitants of the land, to the Aboriginal people?
We do. The Aboriginal people are very significant, a group of people, and the church has a very real concern and care for them. There are all sorts of problems and difficulties that they face. And in all of our dioceses, all of our local churches, there are special ministries that have been constructed to help them and to enable them to take their rightful place in the life of the church. So the Bishops' Conference has a particular commission that's associated with dialoguing with the Indigenous peoples, talking to the Aboriginal people about their lives and working out ways in conjunction with them of helping them to live out their life in the really good human way that's based on faith.
And yet the synod document Ecclesia and Oceania described the Aboriginals as a minority in their own land and in many ways a dispossessed cultural group. Can you outline perhaps some of the most significant problems that they face and also the contribution, the specific contribution that perhaps they can give to the church?
Look, the people who belong to the Indigenous groups, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, are small in number. But that's a result of the history of our country and the many different reasons. But although small in number, they're of special importance to the church, and we do see that we have an important responsibility to care for them and to engage with them, to help them to be able to take their rightful place in the life of the church and the life of the community. And some of the really big problems they face are problems that are created by lack of opportunity, the lack of healthcare, the lack of education, the lack of social assistance and so on to them. And the church is in the front line of not only doing all it can to respond itself, but to remind the rest of the Australian community and our governments about the big responsibilities we have to care for these people.
Next year, as you know, the church will be holding its synod on the new evangelisation. Now, you mentioned that Australia is a particularly secular society. How, perhaps, are you hoping to implement this kind of new evangelisation, and what role in particular can lay people play in this regard?
Well, there are two points that I'd like to make about that. One is that the bishops have already begun to prepare for our participation in the Synod on the new evangelisation next year. And so right through the country at the present time, there are all sorts of initiatives and reflections going on where people who are part of the life of the church are reflecting on what are the challenges of this new evangelisation that we face today. We're preparing in that way so that our bishop delegates who will be coming to the Synod will be able to participate, having had a lot of dialogue with the Australian Catholic people about those matters. It seems to me that one of the big challenges that faces us is, as Pope Benedict has said in regard to people in other places, the big challenge is to help people to rediscover the truth and the beauty of what they've already learnt. So often in our lives, we need to relearn the beauty of what we've been taught about our faith and about our relationship with Jesus and the life of faith in the church. And that would seem to me to be one of the major challenges that we face. The second initiative is that the bishops have announced that beginning at Pentecost next year that we're going to have a special year of prayer and reflection called a Year of Grace to help all the Catholic people in Australia to reflect on this wonderful reality that's at the centre of our lives, this reality of the grace of Christ, which is given to us by the Holy Spirit, and to look at how we can activate that life of grace in a new and powerful way.
We saw something of this grace of the Church, of the faith, coming through during the World Youth Day in Sydney. I'm wondering, what kind of long-term impact did that have on the Church in Australia as a whole, and how much importance you give to this whole area of youth ministry today?
Well, World Youth Day has had a really phenomenal effect on the life of the Church in Australia. Having World Youth Day in Sydney several years ago was a wonderful moment for us that allowed us to not only concentrate on the renewal of our ministry to youth, but look at the important values of our faith that should be reflected in everybody's lives who belongs to the Catholic Church. It was a moment of great grace for us, and a moment that has had a big effect. A lot of the lasting effects are to be found in the lives of the young people who actually were involved in World Youth Day in Sydney and in the other programs that led up to it beforehand, right through the country. So that all the bishops now would report about the fact that we have all these young people who are actively involved in the life of the church in many different ways, who were activated in such a way by their participation in World Youth Day. Some are people who have taken up vocations to priesthood and religious life, and lots are people who are working in all of our dioceses to be engaged in the youth apostolate. The other initiative that the bishops took up was to establish a new national framework for youth ministry, and that's it's really taken off very well and become a very important part of the way in which we go about our life. And we have many, many young people involved in that ministry and very enthusiastic about things. And that was reflected in the fact that we had thousands and thousands who went to World Youth Day in Madrid. And that built on then the experience that we had in Sydney.
As you mentioned at the beginning, of course, Australia, being an immigration country, is also a very multi-religious nation today, isn't it? Can you tell us something about your work in interfaith relations and also the ecumenical dimension?
The Australian Catholic bishops, individually and as the Bishops' Conference, are very, very deeply connected with the work of ecumenism and the development of interfaith relations. So over years and years, we've been very serious about ecumenical relations and looking for dialogue and moving together with other Christians within our country. And over the last 10 years or so, there's been an increasing emphasis on our interfaith issues, because there are more and more people who are coming to live in Australia who don't belong to the Christian family. So we see the important responsibility to enter into dialogue with them and doing all we can to create harmony in our own community between the different faiths, and to develop understanding between one another, and to really emphasise the point that all of us are believers, and that we're therefore united in our belief in God, and that God has given us a responsibility to live according to God's values in the world, and to be an agency then in that for peace and for justice.
My thanks there to Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide, President of the Australian Catholic Bishops' Conference. An unlikely partnership, perhaps, or the shape of things to come. Two top detectives from London's Metropolitan Police Force were spied here in Rome recently, talking with top Vatican officials. Their goal, as I discovered, was to step up cooperation in tackling the global phenomenon of human trafficking. Chief Superintendent Richard Martin and Inspector Kevin Hyland met on October the 4th with the heads of the Pontifical Councils for Justice and Peace and Migration, accompanied by experts from the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. The new specialised police unit on trafficking has already worked closely with Catholic Church groups in London to develop programmes for victim support and prevention, both in the UK and in countries of origin of the majority of trafficking victims. Well, I lured the two detectives into one of our Vatican Radio studios to find out more about this growing problem and about the specific contribution that faith groups can make.
My name is Richard Martin, and I'm a Detective Chief Superintendent from the Metropolitan Police.
I'm Kevin Hyland, I'm a Detective Inspector from the Metropolitan Police.
My first question to you both then, what is a Detective Superintendent and Chief Inspector? What are you doing here in the Vatican? What's the point of your visit here?
Well, we're actually responsible, amongst a number of other areas, for investigating human trafficking. And Kevin has been doing some work with the churches in London, because we have a lot of integration with faith groups who do a lot of support around human trafficking. So really, we're here to work through and think about how the church might assist us with whether that's victim care, links into other countries across the world. Because as you know, human trafficking is very transnational by its very nature. You know, every country is affected. I think the latest study said 260 countries across the world are affected. They estimate 1 million women and children are trafficked every year. So what we're trying to do is build those links, raise awareness, just so we can enhance what we're doing across the world.
It certainly does seem to be a growing problem that the police forces around the world seem to be unable to really stop.
I think what's happening and what's being realised across the law enforcement and police forces across the world is that we need to work together to deal with this. We certainly have had officers this year deployed in over 10 countries across the world, and we're finding that we're having quite a good effect in London. You know, we are taking out these organised criminal networks, we are arresting those that are committing these offences, and actually we're arresting a lot of victims. But we're only able to do that by working in partnership. Now, whether that partnership is with foreign law enforcement or actually whether it's with NGOs and faith groups, I mean, it really is a proper joined-up approach that's making a difference for us.
So, Kevin, what sort of role specifically can the church play in this work?
Well, already within the UK, they do a lot of work around supporting victims. So it's very much when we deal with the victims that we identify, it's that support that they get immediately thereafter. And it's the confidence that they can get that they're with people who aren't police officers. And also it's where the congregations that are there in all religions can actually identify trafficked victims. And we've already identified cases where people have actually disclosed to parish priests or chaplains in, for example, hospitals, that they are victims of trafficking. And because they come from regions where they wouldn't trust the authorities or in particular the police, they're quite happy to disclose that to people like the priests.
And I imagine there's a language problem. Many of them don't speak English.
Absolutely. And many of them will have immigration issues, and they'll see that as a reason that they can't come forward. But it actually isn't a reason, because their immigration status isn't of importance to us. It's their welfare and actually dealing with their trafficking issue.
You're dealing with, as you say, huge international criminal gangs. It's very dangerous work, isn't it, though, to be involved, in a sense, with the victims?
In the Metropolitan Police, we deal with very many serious crimes, and we do protect victims. We can protect their identities. We can put them in safe accommodation. So for them, it isn't the risk, really, that can be managed. Yes, you're right, these gangs can be very organised. They can be people that inflict violence on people by the very nature of the kind of things that they're doing. But actually, you know, it's not a significant issue that should prevent them from coming forward.
So what kind of success stories have you had? Can you give me some very concrete examples of places where the churches have really been able to support victims and perhaps help them to get out, to get off the streets and to get out of this situation they're in?
Yeah, sure. I can give you an example of a victim from Lithuania who we dealt with. She was very reluctant to assist police, and by our working with Caritas in Lithuania, they were able to support her. She was then happy to provide evidence to the police about her traffickers. We worked with Caritas and with the victim. She was then happy to return to the UK to support a prosecution. The gang was sentenced to very significant periods in prison, and she received compensation through our criminal injuries procedures in the UK. And she is now living a very happy family life back in Lithuania. So that's a very good success story.
It's important to work, isn't it, with the countries of origins, with the churches there, as you say, as well as in the countries where these women or children end up on the streets.
Absolutely, and they're the people that can actually help more and can identify the trends. For example, we see a lot of trafficking now in the UK. In fact, one of the highest areas of trafficking at the moment is Nigeria, and the Catholic Church has got an extensive network there. So it's important that we can actually have means for them to prevent trafficking in their own countries as well.
You've got the Olympics coming up in just a very short space of time. This quite often gives rise to a huge increase in the numbers of trafficked victims, doesn't it? Is this a concern for you?
I think it's different for different countries and different sporting events. I mean, we're certainly not seeing a rise at the moment. We are working extremely hard to identify networks that are working, criminal networks that are working in the UK. But I think the strength of our approach is that, you know, trafficking for us is a priority now. It will be during the Olympics and it will be after the Olympics. You know, it's never going to stop being a priority for us. So we're not just created for an Olympic or a sporting event. So I think that's what gives us the advantage and the edge. And I think that's really, really important. And I guess the other thing I would say on the back of what Kevin was saying is, you know, everything we do is around being victim-centred. So the idea about us being able to share information, being able to get information, means we would never put victims under pressure of having to prosecute or give evidence, because we have other ways we can do that. You know, it's just about us getting information and knowledge. And, you know, knowledge is power. Knowledge is power, really, for us, because it gives us an idea about how people are brought into the country, about the sort of experiences they're having. And I think Kevin talked about the network, you know, the Catholic network in Africa. That is so important to us, because when we do rescue victims, we have to be very careful about how we return them back to their homes, because sometimes the families have been complicit in them being trafficked. So when we have a network that we can go back to, we can rely on and trust, that can give us an indication about how effectively we can put those people back into those countries as safely, that really does add a lot of weight to our victim care programme. So it really is important that we have those networks.
You're talking about the experiences that these people have had. Sometimes they're totally traumatised. They've been very seriously physically abused,
yes,
and beaten, as well as, of course, psychologically traumatised.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if you take trafficking for sexual exploitation, which is the largest part of what we do, it probably counts for about 90% of the investigations we do. You know, often those victims have been gang raped, they have been beaten, they have been intimidated, they are forced to live in the same place that they may be having to see 30, 40 men a day, you know. We have had victims that have become pregnant by men that are paying for sex, where the gang has put them into an abortion clinic in the morning and then forced them back to work in the afternoon. So no, the experiences of these victims is absolutely horrendous, which is why it's so important to us to identify where the victims are, to provide that support, to bring other partners in to help take that support to the next level, and then ultimately, if they want to go back to the country of origin, to make sure we're able to do that in a safe way.
Because quite often the families have been threatened as well, haven't they? And
Yes, and, you know, our sort of from our statistics, you know, about 70% of those people that are trafficked into the UK are trafficked by their own nationalities. So when you think of that pressure and that control and the threats against family, of course, it's much more real if people from the country you've come from are threatening you, because they know where you live and they know where your family are. So we have to be really careful around that. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, families are threatened all the time. Sometimes that's the control to make them do the things they don't want to do.
Do you feel that you are making headway in this struggle against this huge phenomenon?
I think we are, and I think for two reasons. One is I think we understand the problem a lot more than we did a few years ago. I think we understand the importance about how, you know, the inquiry must run its course. You know, wherever that inquiry goes, however far across the world that is, my officers will follow that. And that's really important, because the criminal network has tentacles in a number of countries. And if you can cut those tentacles off, then it stops that criminal network bringing people in. I think we've had more cases of trafficking this year because we do understand it more and we're getting a better referral system. You know, Kevin set up an electronic referral system for NGOs to refer victims in. We're getting much greater information and intelligence. But I think we are making headway. You know, we've put a lot of people into prison this year. There are a lot of people in prison awaiting trial. And certainly we've done more investigations in the last 12 months with Kevin's team, which is 40 officers strong, than the whole of the Metropolitan Police did, all 38,000 of them, over the past 3 years. So as you can see, we're understanding it, we're identifying it, and we're being really effective at prosecuting those and supporting victims.
What is the attitude of people in Britain towards traffic victims? I mean, the media is hardly sympathetic a lot of the times to immigrants.
I think it's interesting, and the more you do with the media and the more you tell people somebody's absolute life story, you know, the more you explain to them what happened to them, how they came into the country and the level of abuse they've suffered, actually what I've found is people are really supportive. If you look at some of the blogs when some of those articles are written, you know, people didn't have an understanding before, and I think the more they become aware, the more they're disgusted, the more they cannot believe that human beings are put through that. Because I think sometimes in the UK we don't believe these kind of things happen. And, you know, and trafficking's not just about being trafficked into the UK. One of the jobs that the team dealt with last year was young girls who were British girls being trafficked within the UK to have their virginity sold. So it's not just a foreign problem. And I think for us, it's getting through that myth. But the more that we do raise it, the more that we deliver it, you do find the public are really sympathetic.
It's about raising that awareness, and that's why these kind of partnerships that we're forming at the moment are very good. We're also working with Stop the Traffic in the UK, who are experts in that field of education. So it is actually about teaching people and those at schools and colleges that because somebody comes along and offers you the fact that he'll be taking you out in an expensive car, that they'll be taking you to see the streets of London, they aren't paved with gold. And if it appears to be too good, it probably is.
Chief Superintendent Richard Martin and Inspector Kevin Hyland there. Accompanying the two police officers on their whirlwind tour of the Vatican was Bishop Patrick Lynch of Southwark, Chair of the Migration Department at the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales, and Cecilia Taylor-Camara, the Bishop's Senior Advisor on Refugee and Migration Issues. They too believe that partnerships across all sectors of society are the only way to combat this plague of trafficking and exploitation.
It has spread, and even internally there's a lot of trafficking within the UK, and intercity trafficking of young girls from one city to the other. I mean, human trafficking has gone beyond the boundaries. It's all over the world, and it's one of those very hidden criminal activities that is really bringing huge amount of money into the pockets of traffickers.
So do you think that you're having a certain amount of success? Can you give me some success stories that you've had, perhaps?
I think one of the success stories is a school somewhere in England. The school had a program and they actually went to the town centre and they had labels, "We are not for sale," for the reductions, the sort of labels that you'll find on clothes in a department store. And this is exactly what human trafficking is about, saying that, you know, we are treated like commodities. Young boys, young girls have been treated like commodities, and this is the real story.
Bishop Lynch, Cecilia's talking about the local level. At the conference leadership level, at the level of the bishops and the church hierarchies, how much do you think this is seen as a really serious problem?
I think quite a number of the bishops, especially bishops who would have major cities within their diocese, certainly the London diocese, certainly Birmingham, Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, Newcastle, all would be very aware that this is a growing problem. They would also realise that there is an international dimension to this, that very often the women especially who are being trafficked are being brought from countries, whether Africa, Asia and Eastern Europe. So they're aware of both elements. And thirdly, aware also of how difficult it is to respond to, both in the pastoral level of when a girl, for example, who is in a very difficult situation, when she gets escapes from that, what help can be given her, but also on the prevention side. How do we prevent it in the first place?
Talking about the victims, quite often one of the first places they will come, particularly if they come from a Catholic country, may be the church.
Very often. It is very often either the ethnic chaplains, the parishes. Sometimes it can be the hospital. The chaplain in the hospitals will be referred to talk to somebody maybe from Africa or Asia, especially with a Catholic background, and they will reveal their story. We have one priest in London, for example, a chaplain to a hospital, a very major hospital, who has exceptional skills in terms of counselling and responding to trauma. And because he is African himself, he realises also the cultural dimensions that come to affect that situation. And the staff, they refer to him, many of the people who experience this trauma. And of course, then the hospitals are trained to pass on that information to the Met. But also we would like to, I suppose, make the clergy more aware on the one hand, or the chaplains more aware on the one hand, but also give them the resources and point them in the ways that where resources and help are. For example, like the team at the Met, you know.
Quite often these victims, they will also have issues. They may be illegally in the country.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because that is one of the approaches that strikes me as very important that the Met do. That they separate the question of legal entrance into the country to being a victim of trafficking. And they say that we respond to the people primarily as victims of trafficking, not as people who are illegal in the country. So when you communicate that, and you do need to communicate that to the victims, that tends to make them feel much more at ease, that they're not going to be held account for the fact that they're illegal in the country. The police will help them from the point of view that they are victims first and foremost. One of the things we'd like to do is, which we already began with Racial Justice Sunday, is make people aware, first of all, of the reality of human trafficking. And secondly, even a little bit more deeper, to be aware and open their eyes to the signs of, especially that people might show, which would show that they were victims of trafficking.
What so, kind of signs are you talking
well,
about?
Well, say if there's a woman coming into the parish and staying at the back, and she looks very disengaged and under stress. And so it's that question of bringing hospitality in the parishes a little bit more deeper. And then if somebody who is overly stressed, and just give them the chance to talk. And then if they talk, if that relationship with the local community is there, that gives them a chance to tell their story. And if they find a place they can trust, then you can get them help.
As we raise awareness, we want people to be aware that the demand is actually from parishioners, maybe people we work with, people we meet in our everyday lives. So if we can raise awareness and work with people on both sides of the trade, I'm sure we will get the desired results.
This is not an issue that any one country can deal with on its own. And I think that's why we in the Catholic Church are in this wonderful position where we have a global network through the justice and peace groups, through the immigration groups, to actually begin to get the stakeholders from different countries working together.
My thanks there to Bishop Patrick Lynch of Southwark, Chair of the Migration Department at the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, and Cecilia Taylor-Kamara, the Bishop's Senior Advisor on Refugee and Migration Policy. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.